You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN. You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
All right, Ty Butler controlling the music. Certainly trolling right now with that song. So where are we, Ty? U.S. France. Is it, for all intents and purposes, over?
Yeah, it looks like it's over. 79-74, 15 and a half seconds left to go in the game.
So
and
to be...
France has two free throws coming. Gobert just hit number one, so it's now 80-74.
So
and
to
I
be
think
clear,
Durant just fouled out.
We're gonna get to Tommy Beer in a second. I'm sure he'll have lots to say about this. To be clear, the United States led this game 74-67 in the fourth quarter. So since then, and Gobert has that second free throw coming. France has scored the last 13 points of this game, and will close out what will be just a brutal, brutal opening loss for the United States to begin Olympic play. Red flags throughout their preseason camp exhibition season, and they have permeated themselves today in their first Olympic game, which is, look, this is a meltdown. This is a meltdown in the fourth quarter against France. I'm sure there's excuses to be made. I don't want to hear any of them right now. All right, it's Pat O'Keefe in for Anita, 98.7 ESPN New York. Tommy Beer joining us, covers the NBA and other items for Forbes. He's a great follow on Twitter, at Tommy Beer. Tommy, how you doing today?
I am doing better than Greg Popovich and Kevin Durant and the rest of Team USA. Let's put it that way, Pat.
It's a disaster. I mean, there's no other way to put it. I understand all the excuses, Tommy. The you know, they lose Beal, they lose Kevin Love, who shouldn't have been on the team to begin with. You know, the exhibition games, the first two losses, they seem to get themselves straightened out. I know the three guys from the finals had to fly over there on short notice. When you have a closing lineup of Dame and Kevin Durant and Bam Adebayo and Zach LaVine and Drew Holiday, I don't know of another country that can put forth the five to compete with that. This is a disaster for the United States.
Yeah, no other way to put it. Favored by 13.5 points going into the contest. Yes, France does have some talented players. Evan Fournier, Rudy Gobert, obviously. New York's own beloved Frank Ntilikina, who actually didn't play, was dealing with a muscle injury. It's one of those situations where, you know, if you're looking at the from an X's and O's standpoint, there is something to be said for teams having some continuity. These guys from France obviously play in other countries. You know, we saw them lose to Nigeria. These guys have a little more time to prepare and play with each other. Whereas the USA team is just kind of thrown together, has a couple weeks of practice. And the other thing that kind of manifests itself on the floor today, and you've seen it in the past when more talented Team USA teams have struggled, is guys are kind of hesitant to take an open shot, a shot they would take and make in an NBA game, pass to teammates, especially, probably don't want to come off as selfish in this first contest. And then the other thing is just it's a make and a miss game. As you know, Durant, I think, was 0-for-6 from the floor in that final quarter, missed a bunch of wide open threes. Drew Holiday, who actually played very well to his credit, missed a wide open three in the corner. That would have been a big shot. LaVine missed an open three. But at the end of the day, you got to make shots. You got to get stops. They didn't do either. And here they are. The good news is it's pool play. It's certainly not a loss that's going to send them home. And I would expect them to bounce back in their next game. It's Wednesday, I believe.
Yeah, I agree. They have Iran and they have the Czech Republic. So this was their most difficult game of the preliminary round also.
Yeah.
So, they win those next two games. They get into pool play. This will be forgotten if this tournament ends with a gold medal. That's a great point you made about not wanting to come off and being too selfish. I remember the 2008 games, the Redeem team. And in that championship game against Spain, and the Gasols were such a big part of that team, and they were making a run at the United States. And there was a couple of minutes there in the fourth quarter where they needed someone to be that guy to step up and take that big shot. And that, of course, was Kobe Bryant. And, on a team with LeBron James and Chris Paul and all those other superstars, Kobe Bryant had no problem being that guy. You know, I look at this team, and to me, you would like that guy to be Kevin Durant. I mean, it's got to be, as far as I'm concerned. You would like for him to look at his role on this team the same way that Kobe was able to look at his role on that team in 2008.
It's a great point, Pat. Kobe, you know, the late, great Kobe Bryant, just kind of mattered. You know, he was just the epitome of that attitude and the Mamba mentality. And, you know, it's kind of a bit of hyperbole at this point, but, I mean, it's games like that championship game against Spain in 2008, as you point out, was just really one of the defining moments in a career of amazing games where he just took over the second half. The USA does definitely need Durant, but it is important to point out this in today's game, he picked up three quick fouls in Olympic play. He only five year foul out and picked up his fourth foul in the third quarter. So I think he only finished with like 18 minutes played or 19 minutes played and couldn't bite a bucket. So maybe that affected his, you know, he wasn't quite in rhythm. But yeah, I think going forward, Durant's got to pick up the pace. You know, if this was an NBA game, Dame Lillard probably would have tried to take over. We know the success he's had in big moments in playoff spots. He passed up an open look in the final 2 or 3 minutes. So, yeah, those are those things that they're going to need somebody to kind of step up, be the alpha male. And I think Durant will probably be that guy going forward. Him or Lillard, I think, are the two best options.
Talking with Tommy Beer of Forbes. You can follow him on Twitter at Tommy Beer. Has a great approach to analyzing the NBA. A lot of statistical-based content on his Twitter page there. Let's talk about this NBA offseason, Tommy. As you get set for, look, there's so many unknowns and so many variables. You know, what is, in your mind, you know, the first big thing that needs to happen for everything else to kind of fall into place this offseason?
Yeah, I think the two big storylines would probably be what happens with Dame Lillard out in Portland and Ben Simmons in Philadelphia. Those are two of, Lillard's a top 10 All-NBA player. Simmons coming into the season was a guy that was kind of viewed as an All-NBA guy, you know, defensive first team, you know, one of the 15, 20 best players in the NBA. Probably have to reassess that after the awful postseason. Last three games the Sixers played this season, he averaged under 5 points a game. Postseason total, shot 34% from the free throw line. So there's obviously major issues there. Does the team feel like they can kind of buy low on a distressed asset, kind of get him in the gym? And, you know, obviously some of that's mental. There's a mental component there that he's struggling. So it'll be fascinating to see what the Sixers do. Obviously they have an MVP candidate, a generational talent in Joel Embiid. Can he stay healthy? Are the Sixers willing to sell low on Simmons right now? So it's really a fascinating, we'll see how that all plays out. And then, of course, out in Portland, what do the Blazers do with Dame, who's obviously unhappy?
Do you think, where's the value for Ben Simmons right now? Because it was ugly how he finished that playoff series against Atlanta. Are other teams looking at him? As fans are looking at him as if his value is kind of cratered, are other teams looking at him as such, or do they still recognize, look, he's still, what is he, 24, 25 years old, all defensive player? Are they still looking at him as a guy with upside?
Definitely. I think his value around the league is still significant. Listen, as you mentioned, he's an All-NBA. He's one of the five best defensive players in the league, can guard 1 through 4. Unselfish player, looking to pass, great facilitator. I think, and the other thing in terms of his value is he's locked into he's in the second year of his max extension, so he's going to make a decent chunk of change, but it's less than $30 million a year, and he's locked in for 4 more years. So if you're a team that has trouble, with signing free agents, it's rare you can get one of those All-NBA talent players that's locked into a long-term contract. So, will a team like New Orleans or another team that necessarily hasn't had great success in the free agent market make a run at Simmons? And then the question is, what can they get sending back? And the other thing to kind of, weigh in is he truly a point guard going forward? Because if you can have if he plays power forward, that can facilitate the offense a little bit, then his struggles offensively, are a little bit minimized. But yeah, at the end of the day, it all comes, can he become an average free throw shooter? It's like 65%, 70%. Because if he's not, if he's in that 30%, 40% range, that's just untenable. And that means you can't, it's very difficult to play a guy in the final 5 minutes of a playoff game if you're playing 4 or 5 in the offensive end. And that's what Philly was towards the end of the season. So I guess it's kind of the value you view him is, can you get him into your organization, sit him down with a sports psychologist and kind of work through some issues there and get him back to, he doesn't, again, if he's just an average offensive player, he's one of the 15 best players on the planet. So that's kind of, you know, can you get him there is the question that obviously GMs are going to have to ask themselves.
Tommy, you look at the Knicks, and if you were to look at their season prior to the beginning of last year, I think a reasonable expectation would have been if they can compete for one of those play-in spots, I think you would have been happy. And as we know, they far exceeded that, 10 games above 500, fourth seed in the East, home court advantage in the first round, Tom Thibodeau, coach of the year, Julius Randle, second team, All-NBA. So at the minimum, what they've done is they've accelerated the process because now the expectations are going to be heightened because of that success. So as you look at this team now in this important offseason for them with all this cap space and all these decisions to be made, what are your priorities for the Knicks to get better next season?
Yeah, I think you have to address the point guard. You know, first and foremost, obviously Upper Payne, it's just not the answer. He's benched in the playoffs. And while Emmanuel quickly certainly has shown that he can be a rotation player in the NBA, I'm not sure he's a true point guard, more of a combo guard, can certainly play some point if need be. Julius Randle obviously was a great facilitator this season, averaged more than 5 assists a game. But again, you got to address that point guard issue. If you look at the best teams in the NBA, a lot of their success is derived from the point guard position. Jrue Holiday, Chris Paul in the finals, just for instance. So I'm of the mind that the Knicks should go all in. If the Blazers make Damian Lillard available, that the Knicks should push their chips in the middle of the table and get Lillard. I understand that's not a common thought among a lot of Knicks fans, and rightfully so. I understand where they're coming from. You have a team that's headed in the right direction. You have cap space. You have draft picks. So you want to kind of build a slow momentum and get somebody that's more in line with RJ Barrett. But my thinking is this. While the Knicks have solid depth, a well-coached team, they have the surrounding pieces. They don't have a true, alpha male, a true dominant top 10 NBA player. And that's the type of player you need in order to become a legit championship contender in the NBA. History tells us that you really can't be considered a true championship contender if you don't have one of those elite guys. So how do you get one of those elite guys? Do you draft them? Now the Knicks are going to be drafting in the late teens, early 20s, very unlikely they get the player there. Can they sign him in free agency? Well, as we know, the Knicks thought, they had a good chance at Durant and Irving. Didn't happen. 2010, it was LeBron. They didn't get him. We've seen in the past where if you put all your eggs in that basket, maybe Giannis will come to the guard if he signs a max extension and stays in Milwaukee. It's very difficult to get one of those guys. So my thinking is you can get those other complementary pieces. Yes, you don't want to give up RJ Barrett and the draft picks, but those pieces are easier to find than that true, that true 1A champion, that guy that can lead you to a championship. So that's my thinking. Again, if they don't go that route, then you have to ask yourself, do you want to sign a Kyle Lowry for a 1 or 2 year deal? Is Mike Conley the point guard you want to take? Or do you want to get a younger point guard in like Alonzo Ball, maybe overpay a little bit, but hopefully he develops. So it'd be fascinating to see what the Knicks do this offseason.
Yeah, I'm torn on the Lillard thing. Obviously, you can see the benefits. He's still 31 years old. He is one of the best players in the NBA. I think with what Julius Randle did last year as a second-team All-NBA player, he would instantly become one of the best, second-best players on a team in the NBA. So I get all that. For me, Tommy, it comes down to the price tag for Damian Lillard. Give me an idea of what you would be comfortable from the Knicks' perspective parting with for Damian Lillard, just to give the listeners of an idea of what it might take.
Sure. I'd like to say, you hold on to RJ Barrett and give him a couple draft picks and a quickly and Obi Toppin. But the reality is, if we're being realistic, think about what guys have got traded for in the past. Paul George, the Clippers gave up 4 first-round draft picks, and Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, and Danilo Gallinari. We saw what the Nets gave up for Harden. Caris LeVert, Jared Allen, 2 very promising young players, and 3 first-round picks and 2 pick swaps. So from a Knicks perspective, unfortunately, obviously I'd love to have RJ Barrett here, but I think that's kind of the starting centerpiece, what the Knicks are going to have to send out. And then you're going to have to give up probably an Emmanuel quickly in the deal, Mitchell Robinson, and then a couple first-round picks. Are those picks protected? Those are things that can kind of get, but if we're being realistic, the conversation probably starts with RJ Barrett, Obi Toppin, Mitchell Robinson, and a couple draft picks, and then you go from there. And again, my point is I hate to give up those guys, but guys like the Toppins or the Manuel Quickleys or the Mitchell Robinson, those type of players are much easier to find than the Dame Millers. And the counter argument is, then you're only going to have Dame Millers and Julius Randle. How do you win like that? Well, listen, let's get Dame Millers and Julius Randle. We're still going to have max cap space, or at least, around $25, $30 million in cap space. You can round out the roster that way. Then you get a Dame Millers in New York. Listen, one of the key players for the Nets last year was Blake Griffin, who came at a discount because he had a chance to sign. And that's the type of thing where you can attract other free agents. Maybe it's a Nick Batum that wants to play for a one-year minimum contract. You can get those kind of peripheral players that really help you win.
That was my next point to you. That's a great one. I think that's what people need to understand. Get the star in first. And this is why I don't think it would be, everybody's comparing a potential Lillard trade to the Carmelo trade of 2011, where they had to give up all of those guys. The difference was, after they made the Carmelo trade, they were left with an Amari Stoudemire who was already starting to break down, and not much else besides that. Plus, Carmelo Anthony at that point, in my opinion, was not as good a player as Damian Lillard is right now. Right now, you have Julius Randle. You would still have, Obi Toppin, if he's not one of the young guys included in that trade. Plus, they've done a nice job of accumulating draft picks. They've got their own picks. They've got the two Dallas picks. Even if they don't have to give all of them up, you're still left with a pick or two in the first round where you can continue to add. And then that last point that you made is great. Stars attract stars. So if whoever the next buyout guy, whether it's LaMarcus Aldridge or Blake Griffin or whomever it is, I think you have a better chance of getting that guy to come to New York to play with a Lillard and a Randle. And a Tom Thibodeau. How much of a factor is he in all this, considering what he did this year?
100%. He wants to win now. He's a guy that can get the most out of players. In terms of that potential deal with the Blazers, Yusef Nurkic has said if Damon Lillard leaves Portland, I'm going to leave Portland. I'm sure Portland would be happy to include him in the deal. You get a very good, above average starting center. Then to their credit, Leon Rose and Scott Perry have done a good job on the edges. Kind of rounding out the rosters with the Alec Burks and Nerlens Noel and Taj Gibson. Those are the type of guys that would likely be willing to take a hometown discount. As you mentioned, as the Blake Griffin says, we know every year after the trade deadline, there's buyout period. Getting Lillard, and especially if you send out RJ Barrett, who has a $9 million cap hit, you're still going to have close to $30 million in cap space. There's a lot of talented free agents. If you parcel that out, you want to make a run at a DeMar DeRozan type player. There's still some other very talented players that you could bring in here. And again, I understand that Nick, the counter is Nick Van saying, well, then our window was only a couple of years or 3 or 4 years. Listen, one, Dame Lillard's not an Allen Iverson guy that's dependent on athleticism. He's more of a Steph Curry. We saw what Steph Curry did at age 33, 34 this season. And the other thing is, the Knicks would have a window. When's the last time the Knicks had a window? If you have a chance to, Giannis hurts his knee and you make it to the conference finals and Giannis hurts his knee, should the Hawks not have signed Danilo Gallinari this past offseason because he wasn't on the same timeline as Trae Young? The Hawks were two games away from the NBA finals because things were weird and things broke a weird way this season. You just put yourself in position to take advantage of whatever could happen. And I think with a guy like Dame Lillard, you get that star and worry about the rest later.
Yeah, it's a great point, and it's going to be really interesting to see how this plays out. All right, let me ask the antithesis of that. Let's say the Knicks decide to continue to remain patient here. For some reason, Leon Rose and company feel the price tag is too high, or the Trailblazers aren't ready to deal Damian Lillard yet. Let's talk about the draft. And the Knicks have the two first-round picks at 19 and 21. Not ideal, but look, they got Emmanuel Quickley at 25 last year, so you never know. Any idea of who they could be targeting in that area at next week's draft?
Yeah, I think the point guard is definitely, they have a better idea of whether Lillard's going to become available or not, or whether they are in love with Lowry and they've kind of, sent, messages back and forth and they feel like he's going to come, or another veteran point guard. If that's not the case, I definitely think, targeting a point guard, whether it's Sharif Cooper out of Auburn, Trey Mann is kind of a bit of a combo guard. He'll be in the conversation there. The other thing I think that is important to point out, though, if you talk to league execs, not only do the Knicks have 19 and 21, they also have the 35th overall pick. They're one of just three teams with three picks in the top 35 overall. So it sounds like the Knicks are very interested in moving up, kind of consolidating that draft capital to get into the low teens, late lottery. So therefore, could they get one of the premier point guards? The Josh Gidley kid out of Australia. He's a 6'10 point guard that is very intriguing to a lot of scouts. So that could definitely shake things up. If I was a Knicks fan, I wouldn't necessarily. I think there's probably a better chance that they trade at least two of those picks to move up, whether it's 21 and 32 to move up to 18 or 19 and 21 to move up to 12, something along those lines. I'd say there's, maybe a coin flip, 50-50 shot that they do something along those lines on draft night.
Tommy Buehr of Forbes, a couple more with him. I think Leon Rose has done a good job. I mean, he hasn't been overly aggressive, but I think that's probably wise since he took over. If there's one move or non-move of his that I would nitpick right now, because we're talking about, Tommy, the point guard position, I think the point guard position looks a lot different if the Knicks have Tyrese Halliburton, who went to the Sacramento Kings last year.
Can't disagree with you. We always know that the speculation is 2020, but a lot of folks were very high on Halliburton coming out, and eighth overall, that certainly was the guy I would have taken. It certainly proved any skeptics wrong. He looks like one of the best young point guards in the game. So we'll see. Obi showed some emphasis, and I guess if you want to argue the counter, maybe the Knicks don't get quickly at 25 if they take Halliburton at 8. But yes, and that certainly looks like a situation that could come back to bite him, especially with the point guard situation, I think.
It's a little frustrating for the Knicks fan, right, to watch the playoffs and you see Mikal Bridges in the finals taking a pick after Kevin Knox.
Right.
Obviously, Donovan Mitchell and what he's turned out to be in Utah, New York guy to boot. A little frustrating. Let me transition to the Nets, a couple on them. Watching the playoffs, I as steadfast as I've ever been, the Nets were the best team in the NBA this year. And I think even with Harden compromised, if Irving doesn't get hurt in game 4, I think they beat the Bucks. And if they stay reasonably healthy throughout, I think they win the NBA championship. That's my opinion. If you're the Nets, do you just run it back and hope things turn out better health-wise this year? Or are there moves to be made there?
Yeah, no, I think you have your core intact. This is obviously it could be a make or break year considering the playoff options coming up for both KD and Kyrie. But I 100% agree with you. We talk so much, the amount luck plays in championships in every sport is incredible. And the moment the Bucks won the championship, I was thinking about Kevin Durant's big toe in game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals. If he's an inch behind, the Nets win that game. Kyrie probably is healthy enough to return at some point in the Eastern Conference Finals. I mean, they basically almost beat the Bucks, who are clearly the second best team in the NBA, with Kevin Durant and half of James Harden and 0% of Kyrie Irving. So if you bring those guys back, I think they'll be heavy favorites, as they should be. You don't even necessarily need all three guys to stay healthy in the postseason. If the Nets just had two of those three guys, and Joe Harris could make a jump shot, which is bizarre, the amount of open shots he missed. They certainly have the talent. And as we talked about earlier, stars attract other stars. You can believe if a free agent doesn't feel like he's getting what he feels is market value in this kind of hard market in free agency, maybe he signs a 1-year deal to win a championship with the Nets and then re-enters free agency in 2022 when a lot more teams are going to have a lot more space. That's kind of the same cycle that we talked about. Is if you get winners in, they attract more winners, that increase your chances of winning.
Tommy, if nothing else, it's nice to be able to talk about the Knicks in context of they're now players for a potential buyout guy next season and for the foreseeable future.
Yep.
It's been a long time since they've even been in that position, isn't it?
This is true. This is true, my friend.
Great job. It's also always good catching up with you. We'll be following during the off season, and thanks for your time today.
Great talking to you, buddy. Be good.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.